Sai Guys Football Forum. I am your co-host, Amr the Sai, joined as always by my other co-host, Tad the Sai. What's going on, Tad?
Nothing much. I'm excited to get started on our first ever mini-series. 3 weeks in, and we already have a mini-series. How about that?
I know. This is a crazy project we're doing, but hey, with training camp starting, we definitely want to dive into all the divisions. So hey, 8 straight days, we're going to cover all 8 divisions, and I mean, let's just hit the ground running here. Starting with the NFC West, the Arizona Cardinals. Just a quick recap of their offseason moves. They obviously had the big move, traded David Johnson for DeAndre Hopkins, re-signed Kenyon Drake, Larry Fitzgerald's coming back for another year, re-signed Jonathan Bullard, a key defensive player, signed Jordan Phillips from Buffalo, Devon Kennard from Detroit, Devondre Campbell from Atlanta, shore up that defense a little bit more. In the draft, they used their first pick in the NFL draft for Isaiah Simmons, a huge piece there. Drafted Leaky Fotu, a defensive tackle in the fourth round, Rashard Lawrence in the fourth round, and then a sneaky pick, Evan Weaver out of Cal as their linebacker in the fifth round. That's going to be a good addition for them. So some good moves to help shore up the defense, but I mean, the big question I have for you, Tad, is just, can the Cardinals defense keep up with the offense? Because I mean, we're hearing so much about Kyler Murray, second year in the system, under Cliff Kingsbury, he's going to be a lot better. Obviously got DeAndre Hopkins on board now, but their defense, I mean, allowed the most total yards last season, fifth most points, and they forced only 17 turnovers, which was tied for fourth worst, and 42.6% of opposing drives ended up with points against this defense. So I mean, Tad, the offense may be good, but how do you feel about the defense catching up with them?
Well, before I get to the defense, I want to talk about the one player on offense who I'm really interested in seeing this season, and that's Christian Kirk. I feel like Christian Kirk has a really big make-it-or-break-it year this season. He was drafted in the second round 3 years ago now. His rookie year, 43 catches, 590 yards, 3 touchdowns. Okay, that's fine. You know, rookie receivers tend to adapt a little bit more slowly to the game. Last year, he had 68 catches for 700 yards, and again, 3 touchdowns. So I feel like people are really trying to see, is he living up to the expectations of a second-round pick? And I think it's going to be really hard for him to prove the haters wrong, especially with Hopkins and Fitzgerald in the mix as well. I think he's really going to struggle with targets. So, as you said, there's not much stuck on the offensive side, but Kirk is the person on that side of the ball that I'm really interested to see how he does this year. Because if he doesn't do well, I can see this quickly turning into the end of his young career. The other thing is, you didn't mention this draft pick, but Josh Jones in the third round, we mentioned him last week. The offensive tackle at Houston, there were some rumors he could be going in the first round. I'm glad he didn't. I don't think it was worth that. So getting him at the top of the third was perfect. He's probably going to start a tackle. I wouldn't want to start him rookie year, but you know, sometimes the needs overrule the best thing for the players, but I think he'll grow into a very solid starter in the NFL. So going all the way back to your previous question, though, of how's that for a long walk for a short drink of water? So with their defense, it's funny because I looked at it and there was one word that I kept coming up with when I was looking at their depth chart, their offseason moves, their drafting of Zay Simmons, solid. It's all been solid. So you look at guys like Jordan Phillips, defense tackle they signed, Campbell, Kennard. They're all very solid D linemen and linebackers. Like they just and none of the contracts other than Phillips, I think they signed him for around $30 million, which is a lot. But, you know, I get it. If that's where you really want to spend your money, that's fine. So I think their defense is really good. You also have to remember they have Chandler Jones, who arguably should have gotten Defensive Player of the Year last year with, I believe, 19.5 sacks. And then you look at Robert Alford, who was a free agent acquisition last offseason. Unfortunately, he broke his leg, and so he's out for the season for the Cardinals. But you look at Alford, he had a really solid 6-year career with the Atlanta Falcons before this. Especially for a corner, if you're lasting for 6 seasons in the NFL, you are a solid player. So you got Alford, you got Byron Murphy. Now, I know Byron Murphy had a really up and down year, his rookie season last year at corner, second round pick at Washington. He got picked on a lot, especially later on in the season. But people have to remember, too, they did have Patrick Peterson for part of the season last year. So it was very easy to say, okay, their cornerback, their number one cornerback is a rookie. Let's pick on him. Like, that is a tall ask for anyone who's basically not Jalen Ramsey as a rookie. So I think Byron Murphy still has a lot of promise. And you look at Buda Baker, who led the league in tackles for a safety. It's just you all around, they just have a really, really good defense. And you can't forget, they still have Patrick Peterson. So will their defense be as good as their offense? No, obviously not, because they don't have the talent of a Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. And honestly, I may get laughed out of the room for this. I think Kenyon Drake's a really good talent. I really do. So the defense isn't as well-rounded as the offense in terms of talent. But they are solid enough that I think they will keep them in games and the offense will be able to elevate them to a new level.
Yeah, so I don't think there's a question about the talent level of the defense. I think they have it. But I think just we experienced this a little bit when Chip Kelly took over the Philadelphia Eagles back in 2010, where the offense was amazing and they were scored. Well, maybe not amazing. That's a little bit extravagant there, but they were pretty good. But the defense, because the offense was just so good at scoring so quickly, the defense was on the field a lot of the time, and they ended up getting tired, and just it wasn't able to keep up with the team overall. So, I mean, that's why they ended up going, I think, 10-6 in his first year, and that ultimately led to Chip Kelly fizzling out in the NFL, because the offense may be great in college systems, but just overall in the NFL just didn't translate. So it worries me a little bit if that's something similar that may happen here, where you know, Kyler Murray and Kenyon Drake and DeAndre Hopkins, they're just going to lead this high-scoring offense that will score quickly, and it just will put so much pressure on the defense to either A, force stops, or B, you know, have to give up plays, and it's just like, I don't know if they'll be able to do that. And they play in a tough division. I mean, San Francisco, obviously, defending NFC champions. L.A., they're going to be tough because, I mean, in the division, in a division, any team is going to have your number because you play them twice a year. You have the most familiarity there. So you may argue that the Rams may not have gotten better in the division, but they're still going to be a tough team to play every single year, twice a year, excuse me. And Seattle, they always play tough with Russell Wilson under center there. I mean, they're always going to be a tough team there. So hard to play in this division alone. But looking at their schedule, right out of the gate, they play San Francisco in the season opener, but they play four very winnable games. They play Washington, Detroit, Carolina, and the New York Jets. So, I mean, it's very... they're four very winnable games, and it's going to speak a lot of volumes as far as how this team's going to perform and whether they're going to be a playoff team or whether they're just going to be another middling team. So, I mean, do you have any final thoughts on the Cardinals?
Yeah, here's my thing. I'm going to go on a Skip Bayless or Colin Cowherd-like rant here for a bit. Don't give me this, can the defense, you know, keep up and get tired? Dude, you're in the NFL. I'm sorry, if you're in the top level of football, don't give me, I'm gassed, I'm tired, I need a water break, give me your oxygen mask. Like, I'm sorry, you're a professional football player, get over it. I hate when people go, well, of course the Falcons blew the 28-3 lead, their defense was on the field the whole time. Well, you know whose fault that was? The defense! Get Tom Brady off the field, and then you get the break that you want. It's just, don't give me this, that of... like, oh, well, they might be really tired. And then, you know what? That's why you have a training staff. That's why you have a coaching staff, is to make sure your players are conditioned. So, I think the thought that, oh, will the offense be so good that hurts their defense? Not going to happen.
No, that's a fair point. And they do have an experienced defensive coordinator, Vance Joseph, so he should be able to scheme a little bit better. Obviously, with Isaiah Simmons in play, like you said, they have a lot of great talent on that defense. Going into a second year, they should be a lot better. But just, yeah, just everybody's talking about the offense and just worried that maybe the offense is going to get too far ahead and leave the defense behind. So shifting from the Arizona Cardinals, let's move into the team that finished in third place last year, the Los Angeles Rams. So they got a lot of changes for their team overall. I mean, not just on the field, but also on the sidelines. So they swapped out offensive coordinator Jed Fish for Kevin O'Connell, swapped out defensive coordinator Wade Phillips for Brandon Staley. So that's going to be interesting to see as far as scheme fits there. Now let's get to the field. They've released Todd Gurley. I mean, that was a big move. He's signed in Atlanta now. Trade away Brandon Cooks to Houston. In free agency, they lost Corey Littleton, who was a great linebacker for them. Nickel Robbie Coleman signed with Philadelphia, another great piece for them. Greg Zuerlein, I mean, Legatron, Greg the Leg. He had so many great nicknames, but he's no longer a Ram anymore. He's playing for Dallas, so that's going to be an interesting move. And Dante Fowler Jr., who they traded for, he left at free agency. He's playing with, I believe, Atlanta now. No first-round pick because of that Jalen Ramsey trade. They drafted Cam Akers in the second round, Van Jefferson in the second round, Terrell Lewis in the third round, linebacker Bryson Hopkins, tight end in the fourth round. Those are some notable free agents. But I have to give some love for my alma mater, San Jose State, undrafted free agent Josh Love. So staying local, kind of, you know, maybe just 6 hours down the road playing for LA as well as San Jose State. So that should be good to see if he could, you know, eventually carve out some playing time there. But who knows what's going to happen with Jared Goff. But yeah, the big question for the Rams is just, can they compete in a very tough NFC West? I mean, we clearly just listed a bunch of personnel changes, not just on the field, but also on the sidelines. So that's going to be interesting to see. They only had under $5 million in cap space. So, I mean, they had to make a huge cash dump, let go of a lot of guys. That's part of the reason why so many players left in free agency. They just couldn't sign them. And the moves they made were good, but compared to the moves that the other teams have made in the division, just doesn't quite compare. So, I mean, just, Tad, how do you feel about the Rams competing in this division, especially as good as they were under Sean McVay just a couple of years ago, for them to sort of take a sort of bit of a nosedive? So, I mean, just, Tad, how do you feel about the Rams this year in 2020?
There's a very simple answer to this, and I saw a tweet from the Los Angeles Times saying, how do you say no when your friend invites you to a party during the pandemic? And I retweeted that with just no. And so I will answer your question, can the Rams compete in the NFC West, with the same simple no. Like, they just can't. It's, you put it perfectly. Everybody else in the division got noticeably better in some area, and the Rams either stay the same or got worse. And particularly the Todd Gurley situation. It's one of those weird situations where it was kind of a bad move, but also understandable at the same time. Like, with the amount of money he was given with that contract they gave him before the 2018 season, you had to free up some room in order to be able to create some more roster flexibility in terms of free agency in the draft. But at the same time, I know the arthritis was an issue, but I really don't think Gurley's been given a fair shot at seeing if that's really going to be the thing that ends his career early. So you look at their running backs, they have Daryl Henderson, Malcolm Brown, and Cam Akers. Okay, that's not great. And I know everyone's looking at me and being like, but Cam Akers, second round pick out of Florida State, he's going to be our new number one guy. Is he though? You look how he played in Florida State, and he's by no means a bad running back. Like, second round was a perfect way, or a perfect round for him to go in. I don't think it was a reach, especially with all the other running backs that had been taken off the board at that point. But what really concerns me about Akers is he's not a great pass blocker. So, you know, shotgun formations, his usage is kind of questionable. He's a decent receiving threat, but not great enough that he's really, you know, that's going to be a concern for defenses. And what really worries me is if you watch the way he plays, which is really interesting given he's 5'11", I believe, round 220, he looks for contact, which is really weird for someone that small when you're looking to be the trucking back. So not only does that, A, lead to inefficient runs, but it also leads to longevity concerns. Especially, like I said, when you're that small and you're looking for contact, that's going to end badly. It reminds me, and I'm not saying he's going to bust this bad, but it reminds me a lot of Trent Richardson. Of the way how he, instead of like going through the hole, he's like, wait, where can I run over the guy? And it's like, no, don't run over him. Just go in the hole. And I share this frustration as a Colts fan because I thought that was a great trade, but we won't get into that. So, yeah, so not only is your offense extremely limited, and we talked about this last week as well, I have some big concerns with Cooper Kupp's future. Ever since Kupp suffered that season-ending injury, I believe 2 years ago, he just hasn't looked the same. He's been good. He just hasn't looked like his same dynamic self. And you mentioned they got rid of Brandon Cooks. It's just I have a lot of concerns with the Rams offense, and I have a lot of concerns with defense. Their secondary is really good. I won't deny that. Their secondary is looking solid. Their defensive line, I would like to say, is okay, but with the addition of Aaron Donald, whenever he's on offensive line, you're instantly upgraded good. That linebacking core is just atrocious. They have Troy Reader and Micah Kisser. I don't know. I bet the listeners don't know either. That's how unknown their starting inside linebackers are. And then they have another guy, Leonard Floyd. I know everyone's going to go, oh, but Leonard Floyd's pretty solid. He's really not. You only know him because he was a top 10 pick. And there's a reason the Bears let him walk.
Yeah, so it's just, yeah, looking at the team overall, I don't think they made enough moves to stay competitive in this division. And it's going to be hard. If you're a Greek mythology fan, you kind of picture a scene where Icarus was putting on the wax wings, flew too close to the sun, and he ultimately met his demise. So, I mean, is this a sort of similar situation that we're going to experience with Los Angeles, where McVay just came right out of the gate, he made some splashy moves, they were in the Super Bowl in 2018, but now the wax is starting to melt, and it's like they're nosediving, and I wonder if Sean McVay just flew too high too fast. So it's going to be tough to see just how these replacement people that they got for some of these big name players that they lost, how that's all going to play out. And I mean, they play a tough schedule too. So I mean, they opened with three tough games. They play Dallas, Philadelphia, and Buffalo. So I mean, Dallas didn't make the playoffs, but they were close. Philadelphia and Buffalo obviously were in the playoffs. And then after the bye week, they got a huge gauntlet too. They face Tampa Bay, who's going to be more in line. So I mean, maybe they may struggle out of the gate early, but after late in the season, they should be a lot better with Tom Brady, obviously. Seattle, a division game, is always going to be tough. And Arizona is always going to be tough. You play those teams twice after the bye week. And then New England. I mean, we don't know how that team's going to look, but Cam Newton in that system is going to be different and hard to contain. But Bill Belichick as a coach is always going to be tough to game plan for. So, yeah, I just don't like the Rams this year and their future overall. I think there's just too many changes. They made too many big moves to try and compete for a Super Bowl in a short time span that now it's going to hurt them long term.
I mean, you mentioned this. Their schedule is just brutal. It is brutal. There's a DeMarco Farr, and that is a very, very narrow window, if anyone knows who that is. But he used to be defensive tackle for the Rams when they were still in St. Louis. But he said when NFL coaches get the schedule, they always circle certain games saying, like, okay, we're definitely going to win this one. We're definitely going to win this one. And he was sick of the Rams being the people, the team that they would always circle. Like, oh, yeah, we got that. So doing that for the Rams, I'm circling three games on their schedule. They have the Jets at home, the Giants at home, and then the Washington Red Tails, Capitals, whatever the hell their name's going to be. Those are three gimme wins out of a 16-game schedule. That's, oh, man, it's going to be rough. And plus, I mean, what do you think? I think this is going to be an interesting year for Goff, because I think if Goff has another year like he had last year, oh, man, I think you're going to start hearing some rumors of is it time to move on from him.
It's very possible. And like I said, I mean, Sean McVay inherited Jared Goff, and they obviously gave him the huge contract. But in a draft that's going to feature Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Trevor Lawrence, that's the third guy that I was blanking on.
I was hoping so bad that you were not going to get that.
You wonder if, depending
if you
on
didn't get where, Lawrence, that would have been a fine.
But yeah, coming back to my topic, where it's just like, depending on how he does, like you said, maybe they think about investing in the future, and depending on how they finish, and maybe towards the top of the draft, they may have to make another move to trade up to get one of these three quarterbacks, and that's the new quarterback of the future, because, yeah, I just, this team worries me this year, and just, like I said, the future just doesn't look good for Los Angeles, and that's hard to admit, especially with the new stadium opening that they got this year. So
don't tell Kroenke that.
Yeah, so it's going to be a very interesting year for Los Angeles and Rams fans. Moving into the team that finished in second, and division was decided by the very last game of the season with San Francisco. Otherwise, Seattle might have been the division winner last year, but yeah, Seattle Seahawks. So big news, they obviously traded for Jamal Adams. They signed Greg Olsen in the offseason. They brought back Bruce Irvin, who was with Oakland, and I believe God, I'm blanking out the other team there. It's Dallas. I believe he was with Dallas. Brought in Carlos Hyde to help with their running back situation. Obviously had huge issues last year with that. They did lose some offensive line pieces. George Fluke, DJ Fluker, and Jermaine Ifedi all left in free agency. I know they weren't, like, huge talent, but, I mean, still, you're losing offensive line help, and that's one of your weakest position groups, so that's going to affect them possibly. Moving into the draft, they drafted Jordan Brooks in the first round, linebacker. Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of that one, but, I mean, let's see how that plays out. Daryl Taylor in the second round, defensive line help. Damian Lewis, an offensive guard in the third round. Colby Parkinson, tight end in the fourth round. And another running back, DJ Taylor, in the fourth round as well. So those are some of the notable pieces. But, yeah, this is a big one for me. So even though they acquired Jamal Adams, I don't think this defense is going to be that much better because, I mean, one of the big things that they lacked even last year with Jadeveon Clowney was they didn't have a big pass rushing presence. I mean, they allowed the sixth most passing yards, sixth most yards after the catch. They generated only 28 sacks, which is tied for second worst, had 131 missed tackles, which is fourth most, and 126 pressures. So if you don't know what a pressure is, it's hurries plus knockdowns plus sacks, and that was seventh worst in the league. So, I mean, this defense I don't think is going to be dramatically better with Jamal Adams, but regardless of the defense, the big question I have for you, Tad, is that, is this the season Russell Wilson is finally considered for NFL MVP? And that teases to a stat that I have later, but Tad, I want to get your thoughts first. Yeah, Mike Iupati's the shell of himself. I mean, sorry to interrupt you there, but when he was in San Francisco, he had his best years there. Then he signed with Arizona, and he got injured frequently there. When he played, he looked okay, but, I mean, there's a reason that he's not a starting offensive lineman anymore. Yeah, so I mean, you spoke about just why this team may not perform as well, even with the acquisition of Jamal Adams. And yeah, this team is nothing without Russell Wilson. I mean, as we sort of alluded to this earlier, they signed Carlos Hyde the offseason because they lost three running backs to injury last year, and they had to bring out Marshawn Lynch from retirement for a playoff run. I mean, that is ridiculous when your running back group is that decimated, yet they still finished 11-5, and like I said, very last game of the season, still had a chance to win the division because of Russell Wilson. I mean, I can't stress this enough. As much as I hate the Seattle Seahawks, Russell Wilson is a damn good quarterback. So he also never had the best weapons to throw to. Oh, God, we're going to get into that in a different episode. But jumping back here, I mean, he never even had the best weapons. I mean, now he has DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. But for a while, it was he had his primary receiver, but then crap at the other side. So, I mean, Doug Baldwin was good, but then he had to play with Jermaine Kearse, Ben Obumanu, Golden Tate was good for a while, Sidney Rice had, you know, twilight of his career, he wasn't looking that great, and then Paul Richardson, who had one good year, but then he kept getting hurt, ended up signing Washington. So, I mean, he never even had the best weapons to throw to either. I don't think enough credit goes to Russell Wilson as far as how good he is for this team, but I think you hit the nail right on the head where he just doesn't generate enough stats like a Patrick Mahomes, like a Lamar Jackson, like Peyton Manning in his heyday, like Tom Brady in his heyday, that eye-gouging stats that make you like, hey, this guy is the best in the league and should be MVP. Yeah, and the whole reason we asked this question is because I came across this tweet by Warren Sharp, and I shared it with Tad, and I mean... Yeah. So here's the tweet that we found from Warren Sharp on NFL Twitter. Russell Wilson, since entering the league, has never received a single vote for NFL MVP. I mean, that's just absurd. I mean, we kind of touched on it. Like I said, he just never has those huge numbers that make you think that, okay, he's an MVP front runner, but you'd think he'd generate at least one vote. So, I mean, really quickly, I'm going to go through, since he entered the league in 2012, so this is across 8 years, 50 votes for NFL MVP was what occurs. So these are all 400 votes over the course of the 8-year career that Russell Wilson has had. Who has received an MVP vote and why Russell Wilson never got one? So Peyton Manning received the most, 68.5. Tom Brady was next, 53. Lamar Jackson, unanimous, he got 50. Cam Newton, 48. Patrick Mahomes, 41. Aaron Rodgers, 33. Adrian Peterson, 30.5. Matt Ryan got 25. J.J. Watt, 13. Drew Brees, 9. Todd Gurley, 8. Ezekiel Elliott, 6. Here's a surprise. Derek Carr got 6. DeMarco Murray got 2. Tony Romo, understandable, he got two. Carson Wentz got two. Dak Prescott got one. His teammate Bobby Wagner got one. And then Carson Palmer, during one of his Renaissance seasons in Arizona, he got one. So I'm still flabbergasted that Russell Wilson did not get one in his entire 8-year career in the NFL. So I'd like to think this year, as, you know, as much as we sort of hit this nail on the head that he deserves a lot more recognition, I think finally he should get at least one vote. But so far I've been proven wrong. Exactly, exactly. He means so much to that team. I really hope he gets one. Like I said, as much as I hate him as a Niners fan, he is a really, really good quarterback, and that team is nothing without him. So I really hope he gets one. So we finish with the division winners from last year and your Super Bowl representatives for the NFC, my home team, the San Francisco 49ers. So they signed, they didn't have too many offseason holes. I mean, they did make some additions, but not too many like big names. They signed Travis Benjamin from the Chargers, Joe Walker from their own division rival, Arizona, as a linebacker depth chart. Tom Compton has familiarity with Kyle Shanahan's system, signed him away from New York Jets, offensive line help. They did lose Emmanuel Sanders. That's a big piece. I mean, not so much on a production standpoint. He never had huge numbers with San Francisco, but more of a veteran presence standpoint. I think he really helped lots of our younger receivers develop, so losing him hurts. Levine Toilolo was tight end depth chart. He signed somewhere else. Sheldon Day followed DeForest Buckner in Indianapolis. As mentioned, DeForest Buckner was traded away. They were possibly looking to extend him, but decided to trade him away. They drafted a replacement, traded away Matt Breida during the draft to the Dolphins. Marquise Goodwin went to the Philadelphia Eagles, but then they also replaced the now retired Joe Staley. It hurts me so much that Joe Staley's retired, but they traded for Trent Williams, who possibly could be considered an upgrade, if not at least the same level of Joe Staley. As mentioned, not a ton of draft picks. They traded away DeForest Buckner, acquired an extra first-round pick, used that for Javon Kinlaw to replace him. They traded up in the first round to get Brandon Ayuk as a wide receiver into the first round, Colt McKivitz as offensive line depth chart, Charlie Werner as a blocking tight end, helped George Kittle go out on more passing situations as opposed to blocking, Jawan Jennings as a seventh-round pick, and then some undrafted notables, because with Kyle Shanahan, it's always helpful to know, Jamichael Hasty and Salvin Ahmed, undrafted running backs. You may hear them during the course of the season. Who knows? And then Jared Maiden, a promising safety out of Alabama, got overshadowed by Xavier McKinney, but he should be a good pickup there. So, as mentioned, just not a ton of holes. The only thing that could be worrisome is that the holes that they had to replace with rookies, we mentioned this before on previous episodes, just COVID being such a huge factor, we don't know how acclimated these rookies are going to be, and if you're going to rely on them to fill in some holes that you had, I don't know if that's always going to be the greatest situation, especially with this year, as mentioned, with COVID. Joe Staley retired, as mentioned. That's going to be a bit of a, you know, downslide there, but they did acquire Trey Williams, who has familiarity with Kyle Shanahan. Should be a good upgrade there, if not at least the same level, as mentioned. But, Tad, I mean, prove me wrong here, but what's going to stop the Niners from getting back to the Super Bowl?
So I saw this question, and I was like, oh, a lot. I was ready to really fight you on this, and I looked at the roster. I was like, oh, maybe not so much. Because it's like you said, their roster is just overall so strong, man. Their front office has just done such a great job.
And just quick interjection, but Kyle Shanahan got the offseason extension. He signed through 2025. John Lynch just got an extension as well, so he signed through 2024. So, yeah, they're going to be hopefully good for a while, but continue.
Very well earned. And I thought that John Lynch hire, when it was first announced years ago, I was like, I didn't think it was stupid, but I thought it was extremely risky. Man, talk about risk paying off. But my biggest concerns with what could keep them from the Super Bowl is you talked about the COVID risks of, you know, how acclimated can the rookies get. My concern with COVID risk and just general injury risk, this would be a concern going into a normal season as well, is depth of skill players. Like you said, they lost Emmanuel Sanders, so their top receivers right now are Kendrick Bourne, Brandon Ayuk, and Deebo Samuel. I like Deebo. I think Ayuk has a lot of promise. I'm not that big of a Bourne fan. I think he's talented, but I just think he's like solid at best. So if one of those guys goes down, then you have Dante Pettis or Jalen Hurd that comes in. Okay, that's fine. And then, like you said, Travis Benjamin. My whole point with the receiving core is it's good, not great. It's the epitome of that. It's just like like that's that single sound is how I would sum up. I wouldn't give them a letter grade. I would just give them a and then if George Kittle goes down, which oh boy, they better hope doesn't happen. They have Ross Dwiley, I don't know, Charlie Warner, Daniel Helm, like that. If George Kittle goes down, I think their offense is in real danger of just completely collapsing. Because he just does, even if he has a quote-unquote bad game where he only has one reception, he still draws so much focus from the defense that without his presence there, the attention from the defense can be so much more spread out to the aforementioned very average receivers, where I think Garoppolo can really struggle. The running game, we've talked about this a ton, especially the Mostert trade rumors. Again, like it's fine. Mostert's good despite his surprisingly high statistics in the Shanahan system, which don't you dare bring up Selvin Young. Don't you do it. I will you, and I will end this show right now if you bring him up.
I like that part of the episode. You losing it with the Selvin Young reference, but continue.
Yeah, you like it. I hate it. Shut up. Anyway. So you have Mostert, Coleman, McKinnon. Like, again, all really good players. No one really, you know, jumps out at you as being a real big difference maker. And that's my biggest concern with them is just their wide receiver depth and their running back talent. But Shanahan has proven time and time again, he can make the most out of very little. So that's a very small, while I have spent the past few minutes talking about it, is a very small concern of mine. I have to mention this just real quick. That Trent Williams trade, oh my God, what a steal. Oh my God, I know he's on the wrong side of 30, but good God. A third and a fifth rounder for arguably a top three tackle in the NFL? Whew! Whew. Especially like you said, like the Staley retirement, that hurt. I remember everyone being like, oh, that's big. Like, how are they going to replace that? And it was just a perfect storm for the 49ers. With the weird, for those of you who don't know, Trent Williams, I believe, had like a tumor in his brain or on his head or something. And the Washington racial slur. The Washington football team, they, like, denied it was even there, despite what his doctor... It was so bizarre. Like, it was one of the weirdest football stories to come out over the past year. And that's why the Washington football team was ready to just get rid of him for nothing. Because they were just like, all right, he's not going to play for us. He's either going to retire if we don't trade him, so let's get something. So, God, what a great, perfect replacement. Even if it's just for the next 2 or 3 years, that's fine. You can draft his replacement in the mid rounds over the next few years, or if you want to spend a first round. They've proven they're willing to trade back into the first round to fill some needs. Or, you know what, sign someone in free agency. Bottom line is, the Trent Williams hole plug was just a brilliant move. And then moving on to their defense, I want to point out some problems. I just can't. Like you said, their biggest subtraction this offseason was the loss of DeForest Buckner. As a Colts fan, I loved it. I'm very excited to have him on the team. And then, of course, they got Javon Kinlaw. And to give people a little background information, we were talking to the LAFB group chat earlier this week about, you know, who are some of the better draft picks and everything, and someone said Kinlaw. And I said, oh, that should have been one of my value picks for last week's episode, because Kinlaw's great. I thought... I was so torn between him and Derek Brown in the top 10 for best defensive tackle. And honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if both of them went in the top 10. And the 49ers got him picks later. Like, that was such a great pick. It's the perfect replacement for Buckner. Their play style is so similar. It's one of those picks that just blew my mind of, like, just how much it made sense. And I know one of my friends who I was watching the draft with, he was an Oklahoma grad, and he was screaming, literally screaming, at the fact that the 49ers didn't draft CeeDee Lamb. He wanted that so bad because he's also a 49ers fan. So that would have been a just dream come true for him. And then they trade back up for Ayuk. Again, great decision, because I'm not so sure they would have been there. You look at, again, with the Colts, they took Michael Pittman at the top of the second round. I think the Colts would have taken Ayuk if the 49ers didn't trade up. So very, very good decision to trade up back into the first round to really round out what I've already talked about as a pretty mediocre wide receiver core. My biggest concern is, this is going to be a take, Jimmy Garoppolo. If anything is going to hold the 49ers from reaching or winning their next Super Bowl, it's Jimmy G. Because here's the thing. Think about this. What is the one play everyone remembers from last year's Super Bowl?
It's that overthrow to Emmanuel Sanders. The very end of the game.
It's either that or the George Kittle PI.
Yeah, one of those two. That makes sense.
So I really do question if Jimmy G is... And granted, we've only had one full year of him as a starter, so maybe this is a little premature to start questioning him, but I have to question him nonetheless. I have serious doubts if he can be a true number one quarterback.
And that's fair. I mean, you're not the only one questioning the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo should be the starter of this team for, you know, the next handful of years at least, but he had a full year finally last season after coming off the ACL injury, obviously. But before he had the ACL injury, he was looking pretty good as well. He obviously had the 5 games where they made the switch to him when they acquired him. He didn't have full grasp of the offense, but he looked good at that time as well. Is he the best fit for this offense? Maybe not, but it's hard for me to find somebody else that won't require additional investment, additional training, additional just resources to try and make them a good quarterback for the system, whereas Garoppolo's already been the system for 3 years now. I know he's only played for about maybe a year and a half as far as total games under Kyle Shanahan, but I think he's a great leader. I think every player has gotten his back every time anybody criticizes him on social media. He was I know we sort of talked about this as a future episode topic, but he was number 43 on the top 100 list. So, I mean, there's something to say there as far as how the players respect
that list is really undisputable. That's a great reinforcement point. There we go.
Hey, he still made that list, right? So, I mean, you can take it how you want, but we'll discuss that as mentioned a future topic down the road. But I think now, finally, having a full year under his belt, he took them to a Super Bowl. Now he's going to have an offseason. I know it's a little bit of a stranger offseason, but I think he really has the support of his team, the support of the coaching staff, that he has a chip on his shoulder. I mean, I think he's just going to take this offense to another level in this coming season where, yeah, they may still rely on the running game. That's the forefront of this offense, to have a strong running attack, but I think Kyle Shanahan will give more control to Jimmy Garoppolo to lead them to victories, to put the ball in his hands, as opposed to the running game. So, you know, I agree that maybe he's not the best fit, but I think he's really going to make positive strides where people are going to be looking back at this offseason saying, like, why did we question him as far as the leader of this franchise?
I will say, in defense of Jimmy G, people forget about this given, you know, the fact that it never came to be. But there were reports that Brady's top destination when he was a free agent was, in fact, to go to San Francisco. But San Francisco was like, no, we don't want you here, dude. We're sticking with Jimmy G, which speaks to two things. One, their faith in Jimmy G. So, okay, that tells me a lot that Shanahan believes, okay, we can make this work. And two, that Brady saw this 49ers roster and said, oh, I can make this work. We can turn this into a Super Bowl. So, again, what's keeping the 49ers from the Super Bowl? They're in a tough division, but honestly, ultimately, what's keeping them out of the Super Bowl is themselves. If they can avoid bad injuries and Jimmy G doesn't totally crap the bed, yeah, I could totally see them repeating. Also, another thing I want to speak about real quick, I actually did my research. The Super Bowl hangover, in quotes, is actually a complete myth. In the past 10 years, over 50% of the Super Bowl losers made it back to the playoffs, and what constitutes as the hangovers, well, they don't make it back to the Super Bowl next year. Well, that's really hard to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Most Super Bowl losers make it back to the playoffs the next year, and then they either lose in the wild card divisional round. Of course, the Patriots were the only team, or not only team, but one of the only teams to lose in the conference championship the following year. But yeah, so Super Bowl hangover is not real, so that's not a concern of mine at all.
Yeah, so just jumping back, I just want to do a quick scan of possible teams that can give the Niners some trouble this upcoming season. So, Tampa Bay. I mean, they have a great team there, but one of the reasons that has me not believing so hard that they can stop the Niners is just Brady in the system. I don't know how it's going to look there. And just the thing that keeps Brady out of control in most situations is that the Niners are good at building pressure on getting to the quarterback. So they should be able to get Brady out of his rhythm and prevent him from making throws and staying in rhythm. So they should be able to overcome Tampa Bay. New Orleans, that was one of the toughest teams, and they are a very complete team this year. But, I mean, I hate to joke, but they find a way to beat themselves every year. So, I mean, I think the Niners can overcome them as well. That was one of our tougher games last year, an exciting game last year. Dallas, they're going to be a tough team, but the Niners are really good at stopping the run, so they'll be able to contain Elliott, force Prescott to beat them. Prescott is good, but I think we're able to be able to game plan and prevent him from doing that. Philadelphia, very similar to Dallas. I think we can contain the run game, force Wentz to beat us. Who knows, maybe some more receivers will go out. They'll be playing against third-string receivers, so that'll help us out there. And then Green Bay, I mean, we outscored them. We as in San Francisco outscored them 74-28 in two games. One of them was a championship game. So, I mean, maybe the Green Bay Packers will look better this year, but I just don't think so.
So you were kind of jumping all over the place with their schedule. So I just want to put in a little bit of context. Starting week 8, they play at Seattle, then home versus Green Bay, then at New Orleans, bye week, at the Rams, at home against Buffalo, Washington football team, that's a win. And then at Dallas. That is a tough streak. To me, if they get through that streak with A, no injuries, B, no stupid, you know, oh, the locker room's falling apart thing where first they can talk about it for an hour to fill out their morning schedule. Basically, they can avoid super controversies, they can avoid injuries, and if they win, let's see, Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, LA, Buffalo, three of those games, I'm convinced they can A, make the postseason, and B, make it all the way. But that is a very tough ask. Because, I mean, like you said, a lot of those teams, San Francisco has proven their worth against them, and I don't think that's, you know, like, oh, well, that's a five-game losing streak right there. But at the same time, that is a very, very tall ask of any NFL team. So if they make it through week 8 through week 15 with just losing at minimum two or three games, I'm going to be a believer in San Francisco.
Yeah, by no means am I saying it's going to be easy. They're going to have a huge target on their back, but I think this team has the means to, you know, get back to the Super Bowl and possibly win it. So we went through all four teams in the division. Ted, let's just wrap this up in a nice little bow and just go through how we think they'll place 1-4 and their record. So, I mean, I'll start us off. Hate to sound of a homer here again, but I think the Niners win this division for a second straight year. They'll finish maybe 12-4 this year. I think they may have a tougher, you know, time. It's not going to be as easy. They're going to be the targets as the defending NFC champions. So 12-4 as opposed to 13-3 last year. Seahawks, I think, have the same exact record. They'll go 11-5. I think it'll be a dogfight between them and San Francisco again for the division, but they may drop an extra game, which will give San Francisco a lead towards the end of the year. So they'll finish in second. Arizona, I think, will have a good record, but I don't think they're going to make a monumental leap where they'll be able to leapfrog Seattle just yet. I think they finish at 10-6, and the Rams finish at dead last this year, but only one game under 500 at 7-9. So, Ted, agree, disagree? I mean, what are your thoughts on the NFC West?
Dude, great minds think alike.
Well, we are the this side guys. I mean, are you telling me you have the same exact
pitch? I am literally the exact same.
What's the similarity here?
49ers 12-4, Seahawks 11-5, Cardinals 10-6, Rams 7-9.
Oh my lord! I swear this is not, you know, this has not been discussed prior. He made these records on his own. I made my records on my own. But
I will tell you who's the happiest to hear this is my mother, who constantly tells me everything happens for a reason.
Oh gosh,
I totally agree with you. It was really tough for me. The 49ers record really wasn't that hard to figure out, because I think the 49ers against their NFC West opponents are going to do pretty well. Obviously, you're gonna have a couple, you know, unexpected upsets either against the Seahawks or Cardinals, maybe against the Rams. So that's where one of the four comes in. What was really tough for me was, and this is why I love the fact that we landed on the same numbers for both of them, was looking at the Seahawks and Cardinals matchups, not just with each other, but their schedules in general, was so many of them were just toss-ups. Whereas I could see this going either way, especially I believe it's the Cardinals who play the Bears early on in the season, if I had that right. But it's just like that. It's that type of game where I'm like, I could definitely see the Cardinals winning that, and I had them winning it. But at the same time, if the Bears end up winning something like that, or a team at the Bears' skill level wins that, it wouldn't surprise me either. And it's going to be so fascinating to watch, because if we're even close to right, this is very rare, but we could potentially have three playoff teams come from the same division. And that would be wild. I love it. But that would just be absolutely insane, because 10-6 team missing the playoffs, like that hurts for that team. And that, you know, if they're 10-6, they're going to be in the wild card hunt. So I cannot watch. I honestly, and we will, and we'll see if this holds up as we keep doing our division dives. This may be the most competitive division in football this year.
Yeah, I think that's a safe thing to say. And yeah, this was the first of our division dives. But I mean, hey, tune in this entire week. And next day, because there's 8 divisions. So just finished the NFC West today, but we got the AFC West coming at you tomorrow. Once again, just thank you so much to the LAFB Network for giving us this opportunity to host here. Yeah, that's pretty much the end of the show. I mean, Tad, this is a ton of fun.
Yeah, I love it. And we got, what, 1 down, 7 more to go? My math is right. Definitely. I'm terrible at math.
Yeah, so, you got good math. All right,
there we go.
Yeah, so make sure you tune in rest of this week. Last mention, we got AFC West tomorrow. Yeah, just thank you again for listening, and we hope to catch you later this week.
Stay safe, everyone.